I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the other Mark Benioff. He seems like, and maybe this is too strong of a word, an eccentric guy at times. What advice would you give to Stuart Butterfield, the CEO of Slack, who will be joining Salesforce, about working with Mark based on your experience with him so far?
We're all our own special snowflakes, and so, you know, I won't judge anyone on that.
Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop. We're coming to you from Seattle, where we report each day on what's happening around us in technology, science, and innovation. What happens here matters everywhere, and every week on this show, we talk about some of the biggest and most interesting stories we've been covering. Just recently, we got our first glimpse of the financial status of Tableau Software since the Seattle-based data visualization company was acquired for more than $15 billion by Salesforce in 2019. We'll be getting the inside details from our guest, Mark Nelson, the new Tableau CEO. We'll also get his actual advice for Slack CEO Stuart Butterfield about working for Mark Benioff of Salesforce. An engineer and computer scientist, Mark Nelson has held leadership positions at companies including Oracle and Concur, and he recently became the new Tableau CEO through this chain of events. See if you can follow this. Adam Selipsky, the former Tableau CEO, became the CEO of Amazon Web Services, taking over for Andy Jassy, who's taking over for Jeff Bezos as Amazon CEO. Mark Nelson, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me today.
So did you send a note to Jeff Bezos saying thanks for the new job?
I did not thank Jeff Bezos for the new job. Maybe I should, but he's getting busy to go into space. So I think he's got other things on his mind right now.
Perhaps. Just a few. So, Mark, in all seriousness, you know, you've taken the reins at Tableau at really a fascinating time in the company's history. It was founded way back in 2003. It was spun out of Stanford with this vision that really persists to this day of helping people see and understand data. And Tableau went public in 2013. It then made the transition to the cloud under your predecessor while you were there. And then it was acquired by Salesforce in 2019. What are the biggest challenges you and your team are taking on at this point in Tableau's evolution? What defines this era that you're in right now?
Yeah, great question. And certainly our mission and that basic fundamental of who we are, of helping people see and understand data, that hasn't changed. But a lot of things have changed in the world and are changing in the world as we go forward. So we're at this time and place where the ability to act upon and understand data is really becoming a new microscope or telescope in the world, right? This convergence of the ability to gather data, the ability to process data, and the desire and knowledge to, you know, get answers and make decisions based on the data could never be more important, both just from where we are as an industry, but then also the last year has shown, you know, how quickly we need to, both in the business world and in our personal lives, just understand the world around us through data. So the next stage of our evolution is taking a couple of things. First, you know, continuing to get that ability out into everyone's hands, right? Like Tableau is amazing in turning people into analysts who never thought they could be analysts, but it's still too hard to get answers from your data, right? It's still too hard for the casual user to get answers from their data. How do we really tame this amazing sea of data that we're all swimming in, but turn that, you know, data chaos into something where you can really go and get the answers that you want as a casual user in there? And there's a bunch of aspects of that, from making just analytics and what we've been doing for a long time easier, to putting new tools into your hands, you know, the world of AI and ML and predictive modeling, to also just putting this data everywhere where you are, whatever application, wherever you are, you spend your day, you're not making you pop out and go to a separate place to look at data, just to make it natural and in the flow of whatever it is that you're doing every day.
You talk about this idea of data chaos. It's a really vivid phrase. How much of this issue is about adoption, merely using the tools that are out there, versus technology, actual advances in AI that still need to come? What are the things that you'd most like to see improve in terms of technology in the next few years?
Yeah. So it is all of the above. It is not just, hey, more people need to use the tools that exist, right? There are you know, certainly we think we're the best visual analytics tool out there, and there's a lot of other tools to help you. It's still too hard for people to get there. This notion of having a data culture, right, where you're really, your data is precious to you, you know how to gather it, you know how to put it together, you build a culture in whatever organization you're in that's really trying to seek that out, is important to drive these things forward, right? Because it is not ready-made today where you can just go, wow, I should really make a decision based on data. I'll pick up this tool and then I'll be able to do it. You know, there's a lot more behind really making that part of your organization's you know, practice for that. And so, like, as we look forward, that is the goal, is how do we make that easier? And I think there's a bunch of aspects of that. One is, yeah, just better tech, right? Like, how can we continue to make this easier for people to wrangle data, easier for people to analyze that data. Is also about saying this culture and getting people to really want this in their world. And it's also about building an ecosystem so you can reuse other people's work. You're not just starting from scratch. So you can really find patterns and find things that are there for you. And this is one of the most amazing opportunities I think we have as a combined Salesforce and Tableau together, because we're not just a data tool anymore. We're now attached to this amazing, amazing business apps company that is sitting on some of the most important data for users in the world and really integrating and going back and forth between those applications and the ability to see it will let us put together a lot more easier turnkey solutions for users.
But Mark, I can imagine that there would be a downside to the Salesforce combination in that you've got a bigger target on your back now from competitors. I can imagine Microsoft, for example, with Power BI or some of its tools in the past might have been able to sort of dismiss Tableau, say, oh, they're just that indie company across the lake. But now you're part of a big cloud giant. I was going to wait to ask you about competition until we talked about running and mountain climbing later. But I have to ask you, like, how do you view the competitive landscape? Is it other giants like Microsoft, or is it the small BI competitors, and where does Tableau fit in?
Yeah, so obviously, because this is such a pressing problem in the universe, right, there is a lot of people in this space, from big competitors to smaller people who are trying to solve this problem. You know, our notion is always to stick to our customers and stick to the problem that we're solving, right? And we, Tableau, like, pioneered this notion of self-service analytics and of really turning people into analysts who weren't before. And that is still our natural play here, is helping users see and understand data in a way that they never could before. And we really believe, like, that is a unique slant that we come to it from any of the other, you know, products that are out there that are either parts of that puzzle or take a fundamentally different lens on what it means to work with data. So at our heart, we'll continue to focus on that. Like, what is it that the problem that our customers are trying to solve, and how do we address that? And we are attached to a bigger company. I guess that gives us a bigger target, but it certainly gives us a bigger space to make more amazing solutions for our customers. And, like, I fundamentally believe if we keep doing good by our customers, the rest will be okay.
Let's dig into some numbers about Tableau. Salesforce recently disclosed Tableau's financial results for the first time since the acquisition, which was back in 2019. And it said Tableau generated $394 million in revenue for Salesforce in the first fiscal quarter, which was up 38%. And it said Tableau was involved in 8 of Salesforce's top 10 customer deals for the recent quarter. People are really looking at this in part because there's been some concerns on Wall Street about Salesforce's ability to incorporate its acquisitions, not just Tableau and MuleSoft, but also upcoming Slack. So folks are looking at this as a good sign, addressing that concern. What's driving the growth, and what does it say about the larger market for business technology as the overall industry emerges from the pandemic?
Yeah, obviously, as those numbers show, like, I can't speak to all acquisitions or whatever else. This one's working very well for us, and we're in a very good spot as those numbers show. Certainly, you know, part of that is good execution on our part, good products that we're putting out there. But make no mistake, yeah, the economy is also roaring back, which is a great thing to see, you know, across the board, right? There's a bunch of things that are looking very positive, especially here in the US as we come out of the pandemic, where, again, people have learned over the last year how important digitization is. And at the heart of digitization is data, right? And understanding what that looks like. So I think, you know, the terms have been used that we've seen more digital transformation in the last year than we saw in the last decade. And I don't think that was just, you know, going to be true in the depths of the pandemic. This is going to be a trend. Like, it was already a trend. It's just people really woke up to how important and existential it was over the last year. And then going forward, I think it puts, you know, us here at Tableau and the larger sales force at a great place in time where everyone's trying to figure out how to move their businesses forward, how to digitize their business, and then specifically how to work with data and understand data as they make these changes. What's working, what's not working, how do you understand your business the best? And that is through understanding the data of what's going on inside your business and understanding your customers.
So I know that you're obviously a data guy, and you were a data guy long before you came to Tableau, to be clear. And I know this in part from talking to some of your former colleagues, which we'll get to in just a second. But I crunched some of these numbers comparing the growth trajectory between the new disclosure from Salesforce and what Tableau was reporting in its final quarters as a public company. And I came to the hypothesis, at least, that Tableau's business was actually pretty flat at the beginning of the pandemic in early 2020, when other tech companies that served businesses were actually doing fairly well and seeing big growth. And I know Salesforce at one point had some layoffs in this period that impacted Tableau. And I know you were not the CEO at this time, but I want to ask you, did Tableau's business struggle during the pandemic?
Yeah, well, obviously, I'm not going to talk about financials that we didn't release. But, you know, yeah, there was a lot that went on, obviously, a year ago as businesses figured out. And it took a little while. We're not in a business like Zoom or someone who is just like, oh, my God, there's this immediate need because we just went home. But it was very quickly, as you see in the numbers that we have released from Q1, like once people got their feet under them and figured out what it was going to take to operate in a pandemic, again, the need for understanding data and the need for products like ours to help be nimble, answer questions, clearly people figured out that this was important as we move forward. And again, I think that was just, it's just going to continue out of the pandemic. There wasn't a one-time thing to figure out when we were all forced home. It's a, well, this is really the way I need to operate as we go forward. So there's been a lot that's happened in the world in the last 12 months, as you see, and every business has been dealing with that in their own way and gone through their own wrinkles.
All right, Mark, part of our goal here is to get to know you better as the new leader of this longtime tech venture. And as I've said, I've been chatting with some of your former colleagues, and I'm going to tell you what they said about you when you weren't around.
And then I guess who they are? No.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that coming up next.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's the GeekWire podcast. I'm Todd Bishop, and this week we're getting to know Mark Nelson, the new president and CEO of Tableau Software, the Seattle-based data visualization company that's now part of cloud tech giant Salesforce. So Mark, prior to joining Tableau back in 2018, you were the CTO at another Seattle area tech giant, maybe not quite as well known, Concur, although anybody who files expense reports to their employer knows Concur. One incident I heard about from one of your former colleagues happened after you joined, and this colleague called it Concur's Great Outage. I think he called it the Great Outage of August, and I don't think he could remember the year, but my guess was
2014.
2014, that was my guess. Good. Okay, good. So I was going to ask you if you remember it. Obviously, you remember it. What happened and what did you learn from it?
So that was a few months into my tenure at Concur Indeed. And we unfortunately suffered through an extended performance problem for lasted probably close to 2 weeks, where we were struggling under load, under the peak load of the day, which was extremely painful for our customers. And yeah, an extremely painful time. So a bunch of learnings that came out of that. The first and foremost was just, you know, how to help customers understand what was going on, right? Like as a SaaS company, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid around SaaS being the best delivery mechanism for software a long time ago. But part of that bargain is customers are giving over some control. And so when things go wrong, they have no idea what's going wrong unless you tell them, right? Like all, it's very black and white for them. Either the service is working over the wire the way they want, or it's not. And so helping them understand, helping them give confidence, you know, especially in an extended outage like that, helping them get confidence that you're kind of not an idiot and you know what you're doing, despite the fact that they haven't been getting what they want, is super, super important. And then just, you know, the rigors of engineering and doing this right and problem solving, right? Because without going into the details of what happened in that outage, it was, of course, a long, complicated string of things. It wasn't one thing, because we were well equipped to deal with one thing and two things. It was three and four things that happened in the right sequence. And so, you know, big, complicated, distributed system, you know, how do you really go through and methodically troubleshoot, debug, get back to, you know, tactical relief and then back up and running the way you want to be? There were a lot of learnings that we all gathered during the great outage.
Of August 2014.
Of August 2014. Yeah.
So this conversation was actually on the record, so I can reveal my source. It's Darren Bauer Cahan, the CTO at Watermark currently, and he was there with you at Concur.
Through my many years of having Mark as my direct manager and a manager who was a mentor at the same time, I often find myself in a position thinking, in a sticky situation, what would Mark Nelson do, to guide my own thinking? Because part of his leadership style was that when there were challenging situations, you know, he would work with people privately for sure, but he also got us all invested in problem solving and owning the solution. So what I got to experience through him was sort of an amplification of, you know, how to solve many problems that show up.
He brought it up for a couple of reasons. One, he said that you walked into a situation where there were a lot of silos inside a large company, acquisitions, different divisions. And he said that you leveraged that incident as much as you could in a constructive way to point out the distance between where you were and where you needed to go. And yet Darren and another former Concur colleague of yours, Michelle Grover, who's now the CIO at Twilio, they both made it clear that you're not pointing fingers. You're not blaming people. You're giving them the license to fail. So even though it sounds like would point repeatedly to the great outage as an example of room for improvement, you weren't doing it in a way that was blaming people. You were doing it in a way that was trying to get them to move to someplace better. What does all this say about your management style? What can people expect from you in this regard at Tableau?
So first and foremost, yeah, of course, because all big successful companies grow super fast, and you make decisions. Like I always tell, a really successful engineering department is one that can be analytical about what is working and what's not, and be willing to throw away things that they've worked really hard to build, because you will build things that are exactly the right thing to build today. And you're going to wake up, if you're successful, you're going to wake up 3 years from now and be twice as big as you were 3 years ago. And you're going to look at that thing that you built and you go, wow, I was really naive. That's crazy that I built that. But you weren't wrong, right? Like nothing, for all the things that we needed to fix at that point in time in Concur and the things that inherited and grew up over time, like if the choices that had been made hadn't been made, we wouldn't be there having that discussion, right? Like if they hadn't built it for 300,000 users and then grown up to 30 million users, no one would have cared if we were down, right? And so, you know, that notion, this is as a leadership principle, like this is one of my most important things for an engineering organization, is you have to be able to learn. You have to be able to be very fairly empirical about this is what's working. This is where I'm going now and what I'm experiencing now. Again, being able to look at that thing that you sweated over, you made these critical decisions and invested, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into building, to be able to look at that 5 years later when you've been massively successful and go, that was great. And now I got to tear it down and rebuild it because now I have twice as many users and it's just not good enough anymore. If you're a successful growing business, that's going to happen to you. And you just have to be able to roll with that, to learn with that, and, you know, be proud of what got you to where you are and aware of where you're going and what it means to grow.
I can imagine that would be really hard, though. Anything that you build with the team, it's a source of pride, even in the short term, not just 5 years later. It's difficult to do a post-mortem. How do you set ego aside, and not just personal ego, but institutional ego, say that you did your best and yet acknowledge that it's sometimes wasn't enough? How do you do that?
Yeah, well, it's hard. You know, first and foremost is, and I tell people, like, I will never get upset about bad news, but I'll get really upset if I hear bad news from someone else that I should have heard from you. And that's not because I love to hear bad news, but setting this culture on like, look, things go wrong every day. They do in every organization. It's the nature of making software. It's making sure that we're okay with that, that we can talk about our failures as easily as we can celebrate our successes. And we celebrate our successes. It's great. Lots of things go right. But again, being able to be empirical about that and knowing that that failures are going to happen again. As a matter of fact, if you're growing, if you're twice as big, you know, 2 years from now as you are now, you kind of hope your software doesn't work, right? Like that's the way this game is supposed to be played. But all of that is easier said than done, because of course, like I wrote code for a long time and you become very attached to it. It's hard to go, oh, wow, like you're right. Like that just wasn't there. But again, if you look at it from the big picture, there's success in that, right? You should be happy and proud of the fact that your software is now, you know, being used so much that it needs new things on it. And actually, one of my favorite quotes from another person I used to work for, Adam Messenger, who is one of the founders of WebLogic that got bought by BEA. And so we created WebLogic, which was, you know, one of the J2E servers that lasted the longest out in the industry. And, you know, 10 years after his wrote, people are finding new bugs in code that Adam had written, you know, 10 years ago. And he was like, that's success. That means even after 10 years of usage, someone is still finding novel utility out of my code and has never hit that code path before. Like, sure, it's a bummer that there's a bug, but it's awesome that that code has lived for 10 years and is still finding novel uses and is still like getting exercised in ways that no one ever expected it to be exercised. And so it's taking that mentality around it. Don't just look at, oh my goodness, like the site went down, that's a failure. That is a bummer. Like, yes, of course, but there's a lesson to be learned in every one of those experiences.
It's interesting. I mentioned Michelle Grover, the Twilio CIO currently, and her point on this issue was, if you're not failing some of the time, you're not even trying hard enough. Like, you're being too safe.
Totally. That's totally right. The nature of a growth business is you are on the bleeding edge, right? And that's where your customers want to be. And it's, how can you do that well, learn from it, and continually move forward?
Another thing Michelle told me was that when she was leading a smaller team at Concur, it was the TripIt team, you were listening to her. She went to you and you listened to her when Concur was moving to the cloud. And you basically told your engineering leaders who were ignoring the smaller team's input, hey, Michelle and her team have done this. Listen to what they have to say, include them, and learn from their experience. That was a tough message, it sounded like, for the rest of that team to swallow.
Yeah, as always, right? Like, you know, learning is painful, and seeing that someone else has done perhaps better than you, like that stings at first, but it is also how you grow, right? And again, there should be massive celebration in there. Oh, I get it. I can do this, and this is going to even work better, right? Because as I said all the time, again, all these dynamics were there at Concur with multiple acquisitions and things coming in. Like I stress with the team all the time, there were no bad choices, right? Proof by existence. If those choices hadn't been made, you know, Concur would not have been the massively successful business that it was, right? And every large software company that's been around has its own debt, has its own choices. So don't judge yourself by the failures you've got. Judge yourself by the successes you've had and what comes next, and how happy your customers are fundamentally at the end of the day.
Michelle pointed out that you've been a mentor to her. She's a woman of color in the tech industry in a technical leadership position, which is all too rare in the industry, even still today.
With all sincerity, as a leader in technology that is a woman and a woman of color, how much I appreciated what he's always done for me. And to him, it didn't mean anything. I remember I just sent him a note and I just said, I just want to thank you, because at no point in my career there did I feel like, well, you always have to prove yourself, so that's the thing. But I usually am in a spot where I got to do triple duty of proving myself. Mm-hmm. Someone always thinks I don't belong there. Someone thinks affirmative action got us there. There's always just these weird microcosms that I always have to kind of manage. And he did not do that. He never even thought that. He said, hey, you're good. And then look for every opportunity to make sure that I was in the right place. And he did that without any thought. It had nothing to do with me being a woman or anything. He's just like, oh, we need Michelle in this situation.
And it struck me, companies talk a lot about diversity and equity, and this gets to the I in DEI, which is inclusion. And I know Tableau champions these causes with initiatives like Racial Equity Data Hub. How do you approach these issues personally as a leader? And where would you like to see Tableau improve on issues of DEI going forward?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, yeah, Michelle is amazing. So it's not hard to listen to Michelle. So amazing as a technician and as a leader. And so, you know, back to where we are, you know, obviously the industry as a whole, like I've been bouncing around the tech industry for 30 years now, and we're not where we should be on a diversity and equality and inclusion front, right? Like we're just not. We should admit that first. That's through no lack of trying or good intents. But the results speak for themselves that we're nowhere close to where we want to be. So that means that, you know, a couple of takeaways I take from that. One, there's no easy solutions, right? Like there was a simple, like, hey, we're going to push this button and we're going to go. You know, a bunch of smart people would have pushed that button a long time ago. Instead, it has to be a lot of smaller decisions that we all make that add up over time to the change that we want to see. And Tableau in particular, I think we have a unique place to play in this because of data, right? Like the ability to, you know, use our own tools to shine a light on what's working and what's not. Because on all of these hard social issues, and they are hard, right? Because they involve recruiting and societal issues and training and opportunity and, you know, bias, both intentional and unintentional that you see out there. Being able to use the microscope and telescope that is data to actually understand in an empirical way, you know, okay, well, where am I doing well? Where am I not? What have I tried that actually works? You know, that's a superpower that I think Tableau can bring, you know, both to society at large and to our industry, and then also internally, right? Like we have our own work to do to make sure we're doing everything that we can so that, you know, amazing leaders like Michelle get those opportunities, are listened to, are included, and are you know, rising up through the ranks as they should.
Coming up, Tableau CEO Mark Nelson's advice for Slack CEO Stuart Butterfield about working with Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff. Mark, I know that you're a mountain climber and a runner. Both of those pursuits obviously require a lot of perseverance and endurance. What lessons and maybe even more importantly, habits have you drawn from those activities that you apply to your day-to-day work?
Yeah, I mean, as I jokingly say, if it involves long hours of painful training, then I'm in, like I'm there.
really?
And I think some of that is, it is just the fortitude, right? Like if you want to build something big, that takes time and there are wrinkles along the way, right? You have the great outages, right? Like they happen along the way. And so, you know, success or failure is not defined in a short period of time, right? So how is it that you can have that goal in mind, that you are willing to go through pain and stick it out, you know, and stick out, you know, what takes decades to build, right? Like Tableau is a great example, right? This is an amazing company and we're at the right place in the right time. It was not built overnight. That took amazing foresight from the founders through amazing execution of thousands of employees till now, right? And you look at that and you go, that's a long arc. And so if you really want to make a big difference and do big things, you have to be patient and willing to go through, you know, not just when it's fun and it feels good, through the painful times of, you know, running in the middle of the night and here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of cold, rainy runs. You got to learn to enjoy those so you get the fantastic moments as well.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the other Mark Benioff. Did you work with him at the same time at Oracle, or did you not cross paths?
So we were there at the same time, but we did not cross paths at that time. I was a baby engineer up in Portland, Oregon at the time, right before he left. And he was, obviously, he was Mark and doing amazing things by then already down in California. So we did overlap, but we did not know each other then.
I watched him on stage with your predecessor, Adam Selipsky, at the Tableau conference back the last time it was held in person with his fedora on. Mark's had his fedora on. He seems like, and maybe this is too strong of a word, an eccentric guy at times. I can't imagine what it would be like to work for him. And I realize this is what they would call a CLM question, a career limiting maneuver question. So I would probably tread carefully. But what advice would you give to Stuart Butterfield, the CEO of Slack, who will be joining Salesforce as another divisional CEO or company CEO inside Salesforce about working with Mark based on your experience with him so far?
We're all our own special snowflakes. And so, I won't judge anyone on that. Mark is amazing, right? Like, first and foremost, like, proof by existence in this amazing company that he has made. He has a huge foresight and genius for the industry, right? For seeing trends, for really amazingly listening to customers, listening to the stories around them, and casting that into a vision for what comes next. Mark is, I don't use the word visionary very often, but Mark is definitely a visionary. Like, he is amazing in that way. And his heart is in the right place, like always, right? You look at what he's done with Salesforce, you look at Salesforce's 1-1-1 model, where we give away 1% of our profit, 1% of our time, and 1% of our software. As Mark says, that was an easy decision to make when he wasn't making any money and wasn't making any software, to stick with that policy now when we are giant and each one of those categories is a big sum is amazing. So one is, recognize Mark's towering strengths and go with it. Mark is also all over the place because he's a visionary, right? Like, make sure you stick to understanding your business and putting it in the context of Mark's vision would be my biggest advice, right? Like, make sure you know what you're doing in your business, and then listen to Mark because he's got a vision, and then marry those two things together.
Interesting. Put what you're doing in the context of what he cares about.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, because he is amazingly bright and amazingly insightful, and he will get it. He will get it if you can explain to him what you are, and he will think about your business in ways that you didn't, right? Like, this is the power that someone like Mark brings to the discussion.
One of the things that Mark Benioff said initially was that basically Seattle would become HQ2 for Salesforce. Like, what can you say about the local presence?
Yeah, obviously we are a Seattle-based company. We have employees around the world. Also, the new world post-pandemic, we are looking at like where we hire. I think there'll be a bunch more freedom to hire in places, remote places. But Seattle is our home, and we will continue to grow in Seattle, and we have grown in Seattle since the acquisition. And Salesforce already had a presence here in Bellevue as well. So we've really, been combining those together, and we will continue to be one of the growth hubs for Salesforce going forward here in Seattle, which is a great place to be. I've been here for 11 years now, and in the Pacific Northwest for 26.
Last question here. Apart from the numbers, which we're now getting some visibility into again, in your view, what should we as journalists here at GeekWire, if you could tell us, hey, this is my measuring stick, this should be the external measuring stick as well for Tableau under your leadership, how should we measure the company as part of Salesforce, as part of the world in the months and years ahead with you as CEO?
Fundamentally, like, my key metric is happy customers, right? Like, I go back to, we talk about growth of business, and obviously we're a business, right? Money matters. But the way you make money is making great products and great solutions for your customers, right? Like, the rest will always come. And so I think Tableau has already rewritten what the world of visual analytics and modern BI looks like. I hope that under my leadership, we start now on the path of the next stage, right? How do we actually get this in everyone's hands? How do we make it sure that everyone's answering questions with data? And, that's just not in the business world. I truly believe like data is one of those next frontiers that's going to affect every aspect of the human endeavor, right? Like, whatever you're doing next, whether it's sports, whether it's law, whether it's medicine, the next big insights is going to come. What can you do with data? What can you understand about these fields? And so you look for Tableau to be in the center of that. Look for, our equity data hub. In societal issues, look for us in solving the biggest problems around business data and how people understand their customers. Look for great solutions coming out of Salesforce and Tableau together to provide things like the CDP and insights into customers from that. Is that kind of customer impact and impact on the world to help people answer questions of data that I hope you see coming out of Tableau in the years ahead?
Mark, thanks for being on the GeekWire podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Mark Nelson is the new president and CEO at Tableau Software, the Seattle-based data visualization technology company that's been part of Salesforce since 2019. Thanks for listening to GeekWire. To see all of GeekWire's coverage of science, tech, business, and more, go to geekwire.com and sign up for our daily email newsletter to get all of our headlines. Don't forget to check out our other GeekWire podcasts, Day 2, about everything Amazon, and the GeekWire Health Tech Podcast. And please subscribe, rate, and review the GeekWire podcast wherever you listen. Our podcast producer is Kurt Milton. Our theme music is by Daniel L.K. Caldwell. Coming up next week, a special look at the world of Lego with a celebrity guest from the Pacific Northwest.
Here we go, we're building with bricks now.
It's going to be a fun one. Be sure to subscribe and catch next week's show. Until then, I'm GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop. We'll talk to you next time on the GeekWire podcast.